for great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. Political commentator and investigative journalist, you're with Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right. We are live broadcasting globally here on TNT, today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Thank you for joining us on this amazing Thursday. The sun's coming up here on the East Coast of the United States of America. We had an eventful evening last night. Perhaps I might talk about that and share some of that with you later in the show. We got a lot of news to cover, a lot of stories. There's a lot of amazing things happening and some quite shocking things that are going on in the world. I don't really know how to describe some of the things that are rolling off the headlines to date. Trump's tax returns, that's in the mix. We're also going to talk about the whole January 6th farrago. Perhaps that's going to be in the third hour. Things are a little bit up in the air at the moment, but they're settling as we speak. We're booking guests on the fly because we want to be current and relevant. So hopefully we'll be joined. We'll give you an update on who might be joining us in just a couple of minutes. But like on the international front, we can't stress how crazy the Ukraine situation is about to get. Now, there's a lot of people who are pushing feverishly in Washington for a peace deal or some kind of, they're nudging Zelensky. But the problem is they've created a monster with this little charlatan who is a failed vaudeville comedian just a few years ago was a sort of cheap down market Ukrainian sitcom comedian who did things on stage that, well, quite frankly, we don't want to talk about on the show because they're so lurid. And so he's been nudged, but he's not moving because they created a monster. They created World President Zelensky, and now they don't know what to do. They can't control the guy. They can't get him. He's in trouble. He's in trouble. He's got the Nazis on one side pushing him. He's got Washington on the other. He's got neocons on the other. And he's got the EU on the other direction. And they all want something from him. War with Russia, perhaps. They want to sort of escalate the situation, destabilize the situation, so NATO can move in and play the savior. And poor Zelensky doesn't know what to do. He doesn't have quite enough money socked away in the Swiss bank accounts yet to sort of do a full fight or flight probably more like. I don't think the thing in Miami is going to work out. Maybe Hollywood, maybe London, maybe Hampstead Garden Suburbs, North London. How about that? Next to the Shah's old mansion. You remember the Shah of Iran? That guy, that sort of setup there, North London. That's a good setup for Zelensky. Perhaps Paris. That's an option. Paris is always a good place to decamp for a deposed leader. So he's working his options out. Berlin, maybe Warsaw, who knows? I think he's got a good support base there, maybe in Warsaw, at least for a few weeks. So anyway, that's going on. And the problem is winter is setting in. So that means Russia is going to make its move. And sort of deploy assets into places, possibly retake parts of the sort of contested regions that they're currently fighting in and around. So what does that mean? That means that the media is just going to go hysterical over Christmas because Russia's what, maybe surrounded Kiev again, pulled one of those. And so we'll see if they fall for the same gag twice. If the Ukrainians, NATO, fall for the same gag twice, so circle Kiev, and then Russians take Odessa. How about that? That'll be a little winter treat for everybody to watch. And as you behold, the public in the West, they're not really into it. And they're going to be less and less into it the further we get into the winter, especially in Europe and particularly in the UK because of the cost of living crisis. And so when you've got gas prices, electricity prices that are bankrupting the average household, which is the current state of affairs, and why? And why? Well, they're telling you it's because of Putin's war. So that'll be a perfect storm in terms of Western spin doctoring. They'll say, oh, look over there, there's Putin doing it again. And they'll, by the way, that pain you're feeling right now at home because you can't afford to heat or power your house or your small business, well, you can go ahead and blame Putin for that. When in actuality, these problems started much earlier. They started with the adoption of suicidal green policies, green energy policies, and that's really going back years. Specifically, let's say probably in the last 2 to 3 years, where this has become very pronounced. The other thing is the hyperinflationary cycle, which was triggered by your loving governments printing up hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars or pounds or euros to throw into the COVID basket to keep you safe. They kept you safe, all right, but they didn't keep the money supply safe. They're literally inflation's robbing money out of your pocket. That is called the inflation tax, and it hits everybody, especially the working and middle classes. The wealthy class, they don't care. They'll just say maybe take a few less private jet flights this month or this year. Maybe fly, who knows, business class rather than first class sleeping in the pod. Maybe one less holiday in the Maldives. That's what it means for the upper class. For the working class and the middle class, it means you have to make serious sacrifices on basic essentials. And that's not cool. We don't think that's cool anyway. But anyway, not everybody has a billion-dollar hedge fund that they can dip into. But some people do. Some people do, including the British Prime Minister at the moment, the Goldman Sachs-appointed Prime Minister Rishi Sunak. Nobody has heard or seen from him, at least on this side of the Atlantic where we are in the U.S. at the moment. Nobody even knows who the British Prime Minister is. I should do a vox pop out on the streets of Boston here and find out if anybody knows who Rishi is. If he's done anything, is complete blackout. It's almost like they don't have a prime minister in Britain. So anyway, that's where things are at right now. G7 selfies and Zoom calls aside, we got other news to cover. Well, let's delve a little bit into the politics of Washington. I think we'll probably tackle that in the third hour. Some new developments. We'll also talk about Trump's tax returns. That's all the rage. That'll be sort of the current thing, at least for the next 3 or 4 days before it fizzles and burns itself out, as these things normally do. But anyway, we'll pivot back to some geopolitics, international affairs, and there's a few other interesting breaking stories. Elon Musk is causing a meltdown on the left. People are wanting to sell their Teslas now because they're equating owning a Tesla with supporting hate speech, if you can work that one out. So, wow, imagine that. They're all selling their Teslas. That'll be really great. That means the price of Teslas might come down. You could get a hold of one for a little bit less than what the average CEO executive can afford to buy and scoop up one of those expensive items. Those expensive green items that don't run on green energy. There are green cars that don't run on green energy. Figure that one out. Have you figured that out yet? We have. Well, I think you have. If you're listening to TNT, today's news talk, you will have figured that out a very long time ago. Let's take a break here with the network, and we'll be right back in just a few minutes, hopefully, to connect our next guest.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
See, we're not talking about ideas. It's not a mental game. It's like the, you know, paying $5 or $6 a gallon for gas versus $1.80. It's not an intellectual exercise at that point. It cuts to a point where you gotta make a decision. Is it cheaper to stay home or go to work? Which makes more economic sense? That's scary. And when we're talking about, you know, international events, and now you, if you haven't realized it yet, Ukraine affects you a great deal every day, all day. When these paid pundits or volunteers get you to question what you know, and you should be, you know, asking for facts on things as they arise. Now, in live events, it's very difficult to provide those, because when something just happens, nobody really knows what happened. But when people died, well, we know that happened. And there's been too many situations where the Ukrainians calling the question whether people were there at all.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
All right, folks. Yeah, there's a few things that we want to cover here. Actually, we're going to draft in some assistance on some of these stories. Miles of Truth is joining us on the line. Side caveat. I attended a basketball game last night. The Boston Celtics played the Miami Heat, and it was quite a spectacle. It was quite an amazing thing. You know, over 40 years, I hadn't seen a live game, Celtics game, in 40 years. So it was pretty amazing, a real treat, of course. New Boston Garden, they knocked the old one down. That one was the oldest indoor sort of arena in the United States. They knocked it down many years ago and put up this new one. And yeah, it was great. But the problem is, Miles, you know, you leave the UK and the UK still follows you. Who was at the game? William and Kate were at the game. Prince William and Kate Middleton, they're at the game, front row center court, and the center of attention for pretty much the whole match. Like, people were watching the game, but they sort of had their eye on William and Kate at the same time. So it was to add a little bit of British regal prestige to the sporting proceedings. That was interesting. So yeah, that was interesting to see them in Boston, of all places. So yeah, people love, they obviously, they're popular. So that was interesting.
No, it's I was just wondering, there's a bit of a buzz about the palace racism right now. Is there a buzz about that in the U.S. at the moment?
No. Totally oblivious. Totally oblivious. No? It's mainly confined to the British press, the rumor mill, grapevine, gossip pages, tabloids, and whatnot. Yeah, so they've sort of somewhat escaped here. They've dropped Trump's tax returns here this week. So that, amongst other things, and there's a landmark same-sex marriage bill, which is passed the Senate. So, I mean, the sort of progressive left is kind of occupied with those stories at the moment. So a little bit of a reprieve there for the royal race row. But what is that all about?
I haven't dived deeply into it, but as I understand it, a senior palace staffer, a royal staff member, basically made some very insensitive comments, where she was asking a black woman, "Where are you from? What's your..." You know, and it's sort of not PC to do that. And it was the insinuation as well, if she'd been white, you know, there would be no question of where are you from and what's your heritage and so on. So this, I don't know.
So it's the sort of, I mean, look, Prince So Philip, right? Prince Philip, Philip the Greek, Queen Elizabeth's husband. I mean, he was notorious. They would go on these tours and like show up in Australia, and they'd line up all these Aborigines and get them painted up with Langadi, just a little loincloth and maybe holding spears or something. It was kind of a big show for the visiting royals on tour on the colonies, you know, the usual shtick, right? And then Prince Philip would be there in his sort of tweed suit, and he'd turn over and say, do you still hunt with spears? He'd just make these offhanded kind of demeaning remarks. But it was almost like he didn't intend it to be demeaning. That's just the way he was, you know, being born in 1919 or whenever, whenever he's born, 1920, 1915. And yeah, it just comes off these days as off color and racist or whatever, colonialist or whatever. And that was like normal. Like he'd do that on a regular basis. Charles was caught doing one of those sort of condescending, patronizing the natives in whatever African countries. They do it all the time. So it's funny that this is controversial.
From their perspective, they probably think they're being friendly.
Yes.
They are being friendly.
Totally.
Trying to be friendly.
Totally. So, yeah. And I glance at the headlines. Prince William's godmother steps down from royal role amid racism accusations. I had quickly read that, and it said last night, and I thought that said Prince William's grandmother steps down from royal role. And I was like, what? She did obviously step down in a galactic way recently, but no, it's godmother. It's a godmother. So whatever her name, Lady Husi. So
yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So it's kind of ridiculous, but I think they're just kind of reaching for stuff, and who knows, they'll say, well, this is more evidence of systemic racism. So one, chalk up some points there for Harry and Meghan in their column. If you're keeping score. And an X minus points in the royal families column, if you're keeping score in the tabloids. So,
yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Anyway, William and Kate, well received. Everybody loves them. They've managed to keep their sort of slate clean, you know, pretty much. So their brand is somewhat clean and staying out of controversy and all this. I mean, you should probably get a medal for that. I mean, William and Kate should get some sort of award for not being controversial, I guess, if that's worth anything these days in palace affairs and whatnot, and the public relations of the British Crown as it does its world tour. So drumming up business, I guess William has to take on some of those roles that Prince Andrew used to do, which is unofficial trade envoy and ambassador, because Andrew's little bit hamstrung because of his pal, his old buddies in New York and Little St. James down in the island there, Epstein.
Yeah.
That was kind of embarrassing. We're digressing massively here, as you tend to do, as we tend to do when we bring up royal families and those sort of things. So what else is happening, Miles? I know you've got a couple of interesting things you were going to share with us.
Yeah, well, one thing I noticed, which kind of stood out to me just in the past couple of days, the police in Germany have done a whole series of raids. I don't know if you heard about this.
No.
It's regarding online hate speech. So I gather this is... Well, the press is saying it's an annual operation. They do this every year. They go around and they do a big sweep of all the people they suspect of committing the crime of online hate speech. This has happened in the past couple of days. There was 91 operations across 14 states in Germany where they searched homes, questioned the suspects, and confiscated electronic devices like laptops and phones and things. And I did a little digging into what this is really all about. And some of, I don't know, it's kind of scary because what it means for free speech, obviously this is just Germany, but, you know, it could spread to other countries. But just simply insulting someone is grounds for not only having your home raided by the police, but having your devices confiscated. You can also face fines and potentially jail as well. You know, for making just comments online. Some of them are really not even that bad, in my opinion, but I don't think the German authorities and prosecutors and police see it that way. There's a few examples I could give you. Were you going to say something there?
Oh, no, I wanted to say, do you have any examples of what could trigger a police raid? I'd be very interested to know.
Yeah, so one of the categories of crimes is falsely attributing quotes to politicians.
Oh,
so people
God.
Will go on social media and say, hey, this politician said this quote when it may not have been the case that happened. So one of the examples they give was a 51-year-old man, and they said he was one of 100 people in this round of searches. He had his home searched, a laptop and a tablet seized. By the way, they mentioned that the investigators have software that can bypass the password requirements. So if they take your phone, even if you don't give them the code, they can still get into it.
Yeah, that's the Tim Cook backdoor for the iPhone, and I think probably have something similar for Android. And for the anti-terror, Apple, I think Apple's caved in, or at least with the security services on some of that stuff. It used to be unhackable, but now it's, I think they have a backdoor. Yeah, law enforcement. If they do, it's meant to be, Miles, for terrorism, not for minor speech violations. Are we even saying this?
I know.
Are we even having this conversation? Minor speech violations?
It is. I mean, so the crime this guy did was, He did that. He falsely attributed a quote to a German politician, and the quote was, quote, just because someone rapes, robs, or is a serious criminal is not reason for deportation. Okay, end quote. Not the most flagrant violation of anything. I mean, it's somewhat innocuous in my opinion, but anyway, I guess they took exception to it and they came down on him. And the article later says that even if he knew, or even if he didn't know the quote was fake, and he thought it was real, they still would have punished him.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah. There's another case, a journalist called Christian Ent. He was, someone on Twitter called him stupid and mentally ill. Okay. He tracked down the person and sent their information, sent their details to prosecutors, and that person got €1,000 fine just for calling somebody stupid and mentally ill. There was a whole scandal around... You'll like this. It's called Pimmelgate. Have you heard of Pimmelgate?
No. What does that mean? Please explain.
Well, the translation is penis gate. And this is to do with basically what a few years ago, I think, I'm not sure when this was actually, a politician called Andy Grote. He broke social distancing rules by having a party during the pandemic. Restrictions, but later admonished people for having parties during the pandemic. So some Twitter user said to him, "Du bist so ein Pimmel," which means you are such a penis. 3 months later, this Twitter user was raided by police. He had his devices confiscated. And I'm not sure what if he was fined or anything. But basically, it turned into a bit of a rallying cry for activists. And they activists printed out stickers of that comment, his Du bist so ein Pimmel comment. And they were posting them all over the town of Hamburg. And they even painted a mural of the comment itself. And then later on, there was a Facebook argument between another politician and another guy. And this other guy sent this politician a link to a picture of the mural that had been painted of that comment. And that guy was then raided. They didn't come in soft. They turned up at his house at 6 a.m. with a warrant to confiscate his devices. And that guy's being charged with a crime, making a public insult. So even if you don't make the original comment, if you just repeat it or link to it, you can still be charged, which is kind of scary, in my opinion. There was another guy who made some death threats on Telegram. He was committed to a psychiatric institution. And there was a famous painter, or maybe not famous, but well-known painter, was fined about $10,000 for insulting Turkish immigrants. So just insulting people is enough to be fined and raided and charged.
So they're extending hate speech. Basically, or what they call hate speech. And I say hate speech. And I've been told this even by people who run advocacy groups. They've admitted personally to me that hate speech doesn't exist. It's not a definable thing. But what you're describing here is they're going full bore on this, anything that hurts people's feelings. So I guess it's like the UK online harms concept that could potentially harm somebody. How do you define harm? Well, their feelings are hurt, or it upset them, or it disturbed them. But you know what's jumping out here, Miles, and maybe the other examples you have might validate this or not, but if it's just me and you, or two sort of, or Joe Public and Joe Public, Bob Public, having an argument, maybe I do a mural because you're my neighbor and I don't like your dogs barking, keeping us up all night. So I do this insulting mural, or I post some signs on the neighborhood. The police aren't going to act on any of that. They're just going to laugh and tell you to go take a hike. Call me if something serious happens. But if you do that and criticize a politician or a person in power, that person in power, the politician, can then call the judiciary or the Department of Justice to talk to the police, to get the police to raid your house. So that's what this is looking like to me. It's an anti-trolling kind of new type of legislation, anti-trolling, and things to protect people in power, basically. Because they're not going to be dialing up every Tom, Dick, and Harry's complaint, right?
Yeah, that point is actually made in one of the New York Times articles about this. One of the officials says, yeah, we can't prosecute everybody, but just if people think they could be prosecuted, that makes all the difference. Meaning, their behavior will fall in line largely just by having that possibility over their heads.
So Miles, they talk about Europe as a democracy. Ursula von der Leyen, head of the EU, constantly banging on, we're a democracy, we're a democracy. Germany's a leading democracy. That doesn't sound like a democracy to me. That sounds like the Soviet Union during Stalin, that sort of reign of terror where everybody's afraid to say things in public and says things in private in the kitchen or in small gatherings in on the street. Huddled over a fire, but they won't say it publicly. So they've got two points of view, what you think about politicians privately and what you say publicly. And what you say publicly is virtue signaling. That's what this, it looks like this is going. So Germany sliding down a slippery slope, Miles.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the logic is that, you know, if you allow these things, it encourages violence. It's sort of a radicalizing, has radicalizing potential, right? And there's a quote that, this is from the New York Times, quote, authorities in Germany argue that they are encouraging and defending free speech by providing a space where people can share opinions without fear of being attacked or abused. So they're defending free speech by eliminating free speech.
That makes sense. Perfect. In a totalitarian, authoritarian society, that makes perfect sense. I'll tell you what encourages violence. How about this? Sending military equipment to Nazis in Ukraine, and then having the same government's cutting off your electricity or your heating in the winter. And when they turn it on, they're going to charge you five times more than they did last year. That could possibly encourage violence. We're just throwing that out as a possibility in the theoretical realm. We're not saying anything. In the theoretical realm, that could encourage massive social unrest. How about that? What's the German police going to do if a million people come out onto the streets of Berlin and say, "We have had it with you, you grifters. You guys have pushed us right to the edge." What are they going to do? They're not going to arrest everybody. And we'll probably, no doubt, see that materialize this winter. This is looks like a weak salvo here. They're prepping for unrest, and I don't think they're going to do a very good job really in managing it at the end of the day. I'm here with Miles of Truth. You're listening to TNT Today's News Talk. Let's take a quick station break, and we'll be right back after these messages.
We're saved. Climate activist Greta Thunberg is suing her native country of Sweden for failing to make the climate better.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Greta Thunberg has been joined by 600 plaintiffs in the Swedish case. Greta is suing the Swedish government for, quote, insufficient climate action. Greta claims that the state of Sweden has carried out climate policy that, quote, threatens our human rights. It breaks the law. So Greta Thunberg actually believes that a lawsuit forcing the Swedish government to act on climate will result in an improved climate, less storminess? Humans used to believe that witchcraft trials would bring about less crop failure and less food shortages during the Middle Ages. The question looms: have we advanced since medieval times? Yes, you too can sue your government to improve the weather. What a novel concept. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Several Soros-backed DAs are facing recall petitions, including George Gascon, DA of crime-riddled Los Angeles, and Pariza Degani-Tafti from Arlington County and City Falls of Church, Virginia. Steve DeSano of Fairfax County, Virginia, elected in 2019, endorsed a progressive platform typical of the left-wing DA faction, making official policy not to prosecute more than 20 different crimes, including shoplifting for goods under $1,000, prostitution, and indecent exposure. Loudoun County District Attorney Bhuta Bibaraj, who championed anti-incarceration, made headlines for personally seeking jail time for Scott Smith, a father who was arrested for misdemeanor disorderly conduct at Loudoun County School Board meeting while protesting the school board's cover-up of his 14-year-old daughter's rape in a school bathroom. Bibaraj is now facing a recall petition.
TNTRadio.live.
I just kind of stream it online.
Yeah, online.
Listen online every day.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, today's News Talk. I'm here with Miles of Truth. Miles is sharing a story with us from Germany. And the Germans, we've long suspected that the Germans have lost the plot completely as a society. I think there's a lot of good people in Germany. There are a lot of switched on people that quite frankly are a little bit shocked and immobilized by the actions of their government, by their corrupt media, and how things have just reoriented themselves into a kind of authoritarian direction in Germany. And COVID was the real catalyst for this. It gave government incredible powers. And although Germany is not China, I'm here with Miles of Truth. Miles, Germany is not China. That's certain. Okay, it's not the same type of society. But I will argue that when I see stories like this, Miles, that they're certainly getting there and they're moving in that direction of that sort of one-party state type behavior, not tolerating any criticism of the party or the government, and people living in fear and having to put on a public smiley face for the state. And then behind the scenes, they're slagging them off constantly in private. And that sort of that duality of life in a authoritarian society or a totalitarian society. And so they're just rounding people up for criticizing politicians, dawn raids, taking devices, treating people basically like terrorists. And do you have any more examples of the things they're arresting people for?
Not specifically. No. I mean, there's a bit more background I can give, like to how these laws came about. Specifically, in 2019, a politician was assassinated. I don't know if you heard about this, a guy named Walter Lubka. Mm-hmm. And this was over a 2015 video of him basically making comments about refugees and saying that if people don't support Germany accepting refugees, that they could leave Germany. And somebody took exception to this comment, apparently, and killed this man. They say that the guy was a Nazi. I haven't seen any evidence of that or anything, but sounds possible. So this assassination led to some policy and legislative changes. Specifically in 2017, there was a new law called the Network Enforcement Act that basically forced social media companies to take down any hate speech within 24 hours. And then in 2021, last year, there were also new rules facilitating arrests of people who target public figures. But I believe things like laws against just making public insults, I think that was already in place. And of course, you know, Germany also has laws against denying the Holocaust and things like that. So already the free speech aspect was a little bit compromised there, shall we say. But yeah, it does seem like you make the comparison to China. That's, yeah. I mean, and this is the leading, you know, economy in the EU. If they are going to take this road, and the EU is, you know, trying to become this, you know, globalized superstate, it doesn't bode well for the future, I think, if this is the route they're going to try and take.
No, hopefully it doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't at all, and this means the end of social media as the kind of a great equalizer. And I think this is definitely being geared towards Twitter, I think, because you know what, it's like if you live in Europe or you live in the UK, if someone lodges a legal complaint against one of your tweets, it's been done to me like, I don't know how many times, a couple of dozen times. And then you get, Twitter has this kind of adjudication, quick adjudication process with their legal department, and they're probably getting tons of these things per hour, and they have to do a quick a survey of it, whoever their legal team is, and they'll deem it to have standing or not. So people have made tons of, even just my account and other people's account, if in that area, in the sort of the Eurozone catchment area, tons of these legal challenges claiming that your tweet was somehow illegal. That's been going on for years, and they're all coming from Germany. All the replies are coming from the German Twitter office, okay? So that's interesting, and I noticed that, Miles, over the last couple of years. And now you're saying that this is now the case. So that seems to have, there seems to be a system in place in Germany that they have been working on to prepare for this. And so all these legal challenges, so people are just basically flagging up massive amounts of tweets. So, and this is the problem with the EU, because if they normalize this across the European Union, then what? You know, that's the whole Eurozone. That's like one giant Soviet empire at that point. That's my fear, Miles, is on the EU side. The reach that they would have on that is just enormous.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, you also talked previously about, you know, Germany committing economic suicide, and that's happening at the same time. So they're bringing down themselves economically. They're hurting the EU economically, as well as doing this stuff. It's not a good road, in my opinion.
No, it's not a good look. Anyway, we should keep an eye on this, and certainly within the context of what the UK is proposing, which is online speech policing and speech control with the online harms legislation. That's happily, we can happily report that this has run into some resistance finally in the UK. And a lot of heavyweight people have weighed in on this. It's taken them a while, but they eventually got there. UK Column, great independent media outlet who I also report for in the UK, they've been sort of, they lit the torch on this, the warning beacon on this a long time ago. And their listenership, readership, and viewership, they're definitely keyed in on this issue in a big way. But yeah, I've got a couple minutes left, Miles. There's something else I think you had a bee in your bonnet on we can address.
Well, obviously there's the protests going on in China right now. A lot's being said about that, including by Justin Trudeau. I love this. It's just so great that he came out and basically defended the protesters, saying that we stand for human rights, etc. They have a right to be heard. And everybody, the response on social media has largely been to point out, well, what about, you know, when those truckers were trying to protest in your country not that long ago, what, did you defend their human rights and all that? No, you detained a bunch of them without trial. You send in armed goons to just harass them, and you ended up freezing bank accounts over it. I mean, that's outrageous. And he's just the hypocrisy is just monumental. I find it's actually funny if you can bring yourself to laugh at these things.
I would have taken him seriously if he got on national Canadian TV and he made that statement in full blackface. Then I think we'd all be paying attention to it and maybe, you know, laughing a little bit. But I think that he should present himself as in his favorite way, which he does. As you know, the Canadian Prime Minister loves to dress up in costumes, fancy dress, and to go out in blackface. And he's done it so many times. And Bob Moran's a great cartoonist, the genius cartoonist out of the UK. Every time he portrays Justin Trudeau in any of his political cartoons, it's always in blackface and with a Nazi armband. But that would be basically an imprisonable offense in Germany right now. You couldn't make fun of a politician like that because it would hurt them. It would hurt their feelings. So Trudeau, ridiculous. He declared the National Emergencies Act because of the Canadian truckers protest, rather than go down and meet them and do the photo op. You know the photo op, Miles? when you walk down to the protesters. You meet them, you meet the leaders, you sit down, you have a cup of tea, you hear their grievances, and you make some promises. Look, we're going to fix that. We're going to do that a little better. And then the press goes away saying, oh, it's all diffused. We're making progress. Look, the politicians are, you know, they're engaged with the public and the opposition. This is all good. This is a democracy. At that point, you can wave the flag, right? This is a democracy. But that didn't happen. Trudeau never went down to meet them. Instead, he called them terrorists. So that's interesting. He's commenting on China because it's all about the people are protesting because the COVID stuff is out of control. And guess what? In Canada, they're still running COVID emergency protocols. Still.
Yeah.
Quarantines and all sorts of you. If you're not vaccinated, I don't think you can enter Canada. You can't enter the U.S. if you're a foreigner, if you're a non-U.S. citizen and you didn't get the experimental medical procedure, you can't enter the U.S.
Yeah, I'm aware.
So in Canada, I think it's worse. I think they've got other sort of things in place. So that's a bit rich of him to be criticizing the Chinese. Are you serious? Didn't Xi Jinping just like give him a dressing down at the G20?
Yeah, I saw something like that where they had some words that didn't look particularly friendly. but yeah, I don't know. And then also you got Chrystia Freeland there, who is, wasn't her grandfather a Nazi or something?
I think he ran a newspaper that was supporting the kind of the Nazi efforts there.
Nazi sympathizer. Yeah.
I think that's, and she's pretty hardcore Ukrainian nationalist, and she supports the Azov battalions and all this other stuff. So like what happened, if she was in Germany, she'd probably be a lot more successful because no one could criticize her. Are you going to get a dawn raid from the BND or the German police or the Gestapo? I think we can use that term again, the Gestapo. Dawn raid with the new Gestapo. Yeah, Germany's not going to live this down. If they want to go down that route, be my guest. CJ Hopkins and other great dissident commentators like that. Hopefully they're going to make a meal out of this. It's like shooting fish in a barrel, though. Gosh, if you're a dissident journalist or something, I mean, this is just like Christmas come early. They're going crazy in Germany and Europe in general, but it's not surprising, though.
Yeah. Like, you got to worry about him, though, because I think he lives in Germany, doesn't he?
He does. Hopkins. Yeah. Great author, so
he's,
playwright.
He's got to be careful with his words by the sound of things.
Yeah, but he normally doesn't. He normally comes out swinging. So, you know, someone like him, if they do a dawn raid on CJ Hopkins, it's just going to make his book sales go ballistic. So he's probably hoping there's going to be a dawn raid. I mean, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that facetiously. But that's the conundrum the government's in, is they will make martyrs and elevate the status of dissidents by doing the state intimidation against free speech. So good luck to them. Good luck to them. They're going to raise the profile of CJ Hopkins and other dissidents in Germany. And well, they deserve to have their profile raised. But it would, ideally, if not for that, but if it comes to that, then so be it. So be it. He's a great... great human being, and in a time when those voices are needed so much, people like CJ Hopkins have been there and they've had their finger on the pulse. They've been there right on the cutting edge and delivered what people need to hear in a real free society. Miles, in a real free society, that's what's needed, that's what's available on the free speech grapevines and interwebs. But look, we're gonna wrap it up for this hour. Miles of Truth, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us on TNT, Today's News Talk.